Coming to you from Cooper's Color to Canvas Art Studio in beautiful Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. This is your first episode, the inaugural episode of the Hour of Honor, the podcast dedicated to all things Ring of Honor on the WWPN. My name is Gerald Cooper, and I am your host, and I could not be any more excited to be bringing you the official first episode of the Hour of Honor. Now, if you look, there's going to be an episode before this. That is the zero episode. It's just me talking about how I got here and what this show is going to be and my own particular brand of insanity, basically. But we're here now, the first episode. Happy to have you with me. And I don't know how interested in this you would be, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. What you're listening to was not meant to be the first episode. So having a relationship with the WWPN, I wanted to help out. I wanted to pitch. And the best way to pitch was to make a show, to give them content and conversation. So I came up with the idea of a Ring of Honor show. But the time in which I came up with the idea was about, I would say, 8 or 10 days before Honor Rising. And it was an odd place to start a podcast. Not an odd place to even start a podcast, but an odd place to narratively tell a story. It was in the middle of the Decade of Excellence tournament, which I felt like it was a tremendous through line to get to the first TV taping after Honor Rising. So I kind of mulled it over and I looked at the episode of Ring of Honor TV after Christopher Daniels had beaten Mark Briscoe to advance in the first round of the tournament. And not necessarily because that wasn't the beginning. The match with those two was actually the beginning. But as a great jumping off point, Christopher Daniels' promo, which we're going to get into in the body of the show. I don't want to get too specific here. But that felt like, and everybody knows, if you like Ring of Honor, if you follow Christopher Daniels over the years, that was a great, not just a great promo, but a great storytelling piece. Again, I was just about to go specific, but like I said, I'm not going to go specific. It was a great storytelling piece, and I felt like it was, with the tournament just starting and him giving that promo, that was the perfect place to start. But that was about, I want to say, 8-9 shows out. You know, maybe if you include Honor Rising, it was something like 10-11 shows total. And I thought that I was going to review all those shows and put them all out, and then we get to the TV taping after Honor Rising. Now, again, my logic being, okay, from this perspective, I'm a comic book guy. I'm a huge, huge, huge comic book guy. I think comic books are, as much as I love movies and TV and other forms of literature, I really do believe that comics are the greatest delivery system for story that there is. And wrestling is the most unique delivery system for story. Sidebar. But as a comic book guy, you know, anybody who reads comics, part of your plight is there's so much stuff out there and you don't hear about everything. And one day you walk into a shop, you pick up issue 15 or something. It's one of your favorite writers. You didn't know he was putting anything out, but you gotta get it. And it's awesome. But the thing that's lingering is how do we get here? So, again, comic book people understand this. You spend a lot of time and a lot of money trying to catch up, where I wanted to give you this great narrative through review and analysis to get through Decade of Excellence tournament and to that first TV taping after On Horizon. That didn't work out because life to start, just a lot going on, just tons and tons going on. And I really, as much as I wanted to do it, as much as I tried, I bit off more than I can chew in that situation. That was quite a bit of work, and working on a format and working on a process to make a show, I chose something that was kind of difficult and very time consuming, so that didn't help anything either. But as I am a patron saint of the wrestling gods, they favor me. It's all about the mythology, folks. They favor me. So we get to the episode we're about to talk about today, and it's exactly what I wanted without being too far behind. It is Christopher Daniels' story, his story through the Decade of Excellence tournament, his 15-year odyssey in Ring of Honor. It was like awesome. I could actually do this and not be completely irrelevant, because then the Hardy stuff came, you know, about a week ago, the Hardy stuff came about with them leaving TNA. It's like nobody's going to go back and listen to 10, 11 episodes of something that's, you know, they've already experienced. But from this point, 3 or 4 episodes out, I really feel like this is a worthwhile narrative, a worthwhile story to get into from this point, moving on to some other stuff you already know about. But we're going to get caught up, and this is the beginning of that. So stay tuned. Glad to have you with me. Again, glad and proud to be on the WWPN. Great to get this first show really knocked out and get rolling. Hopefully you enjoy it, and I will see you in just a second. This episode of Ring of Honor TV's air date is February 25th, 2017. We get a cold open in the form of a video package following Christopher Daniels through the Decade of Excellence tournament. On his way to the number one contendership for the ROH title, Daniels beat Mark Briscoe, Chris Sabin, and Jay Briscoe. In that order, all great matches. I suggest you go watch them. Daniels talks about his peers asking how he can still be going at this speed at this age. He says there's no expiration on destiny and that he will fulfill that destiny because he is almighty. The show comes from Stage AE in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with Daniels coming to the ring with a great reaction from the crowd. Bobby Fish, the next challenger to the champion, Adam Cole, is on commentary along with Ian Riccoboni. I am already missing Steve Corino. That's not a rip on Riccoboni. He's, you know, he's Adam Cole. He's nothing special yet anyway. I talked a lot not good about Steve Corino, and as I listened to Ring of Honor over time with Corino and Kevin Kelly, they had a nice little chemistry, and Corino's sort of ridiculousness in many ways was a Martin and Lewis situation. You know, he's Lewis and he's the comedian, and Kevin Kelly's a straight man, and that's not what we're getting here. It seems like there's going to be I don't know, Rick Abani with wrestlers now, with the defections from the commentary table. So we'll see. But Carino, miss you. Hope everything's great down at the Performance Center. And, you know, they're paying you well, but they could use you back in Ring of Honor. Daniel celebrates his victory by cutting a promo on his history in ROH. He talked about being in the first main event in ROH 15 years ago. From day one, his destiny has been the ROH Heavyweight Championship. He mentions beating Jay Briscoe in the finals of the Decade of Excellence tournament and wonders aloud if he'll be facing Bobby Fish or Adam Cole at 15th anniversary. Then he's interrupted by Adam Cole's music. Cole stands at the top of the ramp, and that's not really a ramp. It's more like a stage, so I got to correct that. Cole stands at the top of the stage and asks, who's ready for story time with Adam Cole, baby? And of course, he gets a great reception from the crowd. He calls Daniel senile and says he's going to be Ring of Honor champion forever. Claims he's going to beat Fish at 15th anniversary, and that he's going to beat Daniels because he's never been Daniels. He pronouns, pal. Daniels has never been on his level. All the while, Daniels is taking off his ring gear. Cole asks if he wants to fight and that the Bullet Club will oblige him. Just then, Adam Page attacks. Cole comes to the ring, but before the double team can begin, Frankie Kazarian runs in, and Page and Cole bail to the floor. It's the Bullet Club. You know what I mean? Like where was Kaz this whole time? And I think even Fish calls him out on commentary, wondering where he was, because, you know, it's getting beat down pretty bad, and luckily it wasn't a 2-on-1. Kazarian then challenges Cole and Page to a tag team match. Cole and Page rush the ring, a brawl ensues, and the bell rings. A ref appears out of nowhere, seemingly, and the match is on. Before I get into the match, I want to talk about Christopher Daniels and his edginess, I guess you want to say. From the time that I knew of him, but, you know, before Ring of Honor, his time in TNA and I guess in between, he's been an edgy character. He's always, like, particularly in his look. I mean, he's got a great delivery on the mic. I think he's a tremendous talker. I think he's cerebral. And not Jake the Snake cerebral, but he's not a yeller and a screamer. He knows how to tell his story on the mic. He knows how to get the match over. He knows how to, I guess, inform their world with his words, but without the typical "yeah, brother" and, you know, wrestling promos. But his iconography is very interesting to me. And again, very, very edgy and dark and controversial. You know, the fallen angel, Christopher Daniels, he walked around with a priest collar on. You know, that's not nothing, you know, and even now, he's got the, and I know I'm going to get some Twitter hate if anybody's listening, at Joe Cooper on Twitter, the militaristic epaulets and the medals and the white gloves, not, you know, but it's very evocative of Nazi imagery. Not saying that he's doing that. I don't think he's doing that. But it is evocative of Nazi imagery. And I think he's a person who understands character on the very subtle level, in the sense that he's making you pay attention. You know, it's like you're looking at this, and, you know, if you don't know what it is, it's kind of like what's going on? But he's drawing you in with his look. He's drawing you in with his facial expressions. His walk to the ring with the, you know, with his hands behind his back. I think that's a way to get you to pay attention, in a subtle way to get you to pay attention. The funny thing about saying that he's evoking Nazi imagery is that if you look real close at his jacket, he's got a Captain America button where the medals are, which I thought was really interesting. On closer inspection, you know, he's got his ankh, which he's, you know, carried throughout his career, sort of thing. His look and his and how he comes across has always been very interesting to me. And as a comic book guy, it was like, okay, well, he's got the Punisher, symbol on one hip, and sometimes he's got a dragon, which, you know, I could go into that, but I choose not to at this point. And, you know, other times he's got the Venom spider symbol on his other hip. And it's like, okay, that's, you know, comic book Marvel stuff, but it Punisher symbol's a skull. You know, a spider is a creepy animal, a creepy insect rather. So, all right, that's, you know, he's again trying to get over, I guess, heel imagery. But with the Captain America button and you know, and then I look closely at his slinglet, he's got the Venom, he's got Venom's head at the top of the back of the slinglet. And it's like, oh, he's just a comic book nerd, you know, which is cool because one comic book nerd to another. But yeah, I definitely appreciate his overall presentation. He's a guy I think a lot of guys, especially WWE guys, who, you know, in my view, appear to be very manufactured in their looks. They could take some notes from Daniels. Into the match, Kazarian and Paige fight on the outside, leaving Daniels and Cole in the ring. Cole's whipped into the ropes and is pulled to the floor by Paige. Daniels then flies out of the ring with a suicide dive on both men. It's a great spot where Daniels goes for a sit-down springboard moonsault from the apron of the floor on Cole. But before he can actually flip backwards, Paige grabs Daniels' legs. Daniels is upside down prone and takes a super kick to the face by Cole, and we go to commercial. Back from the break, Paige is stomping down Daniels in the corner. He tags in Cole, and Cole gives Daniels the last shot over both knees, his and Paige's, for a two count. The last shot is a finisher, right? And that is going to be one of my gripes overall with Ring of Honor. I mean, I don't know how the additional knee is going to be more devastating than one knee. I don't know. But it's dead center of the match, and you're making it well, he's got a couple of finishers. You're making one of your finishers, Cole is, a transitional move in the middle of a match because he doesn't get a long two. He just gets a two. So that's one of those things that about Ring of Honor that I guess throws me off a little bit, you know. But in all fairness, that's also wrestling. The Ring of Honor is not the only place that's guilty of that. Moves that should be killing guys, moves that the guys should not get out of, DDT. Guys are, you know, all are getting us two counts, and it for me, it takes me out of the reality at times. Like I want to be engaged and I want to be lost in a match. And then I see something like that, and it's like, okay, that's a little hokey. So that's my thought on that. Daniels fights off both men. He hits Cole with an STO, and Kazarian gets a hot tag. Kaz ducks a clothesline by Cole, but hits a clothesline of his own on Paige in the corner. Hits Cole with a forearm, a spinning kick, a heel kick. Goes to whip Cole in the Paige, but it's reversed, so Kaz drop kicks Paige in the midsection. Cole runs at Kaz and slips up. And slips Cole. Whoa, hold on. I'm sorry. My handwriting's atrocious here. Cole runs at Kaz. He slips Cole, pushing him in the Paige. There we go. Then hits Cole with a backstabber. Exploder suplexes Paige into the turnbuckle. And slingshot cutters Cole from the outside and for two. If that made any sense. I'm sorry. I wrote that and it's all scribble scrabble. It's a great sequence by Kazarian. Again, if you understood the way I explained it at all, he looks incredible here. He looks super fit and he's all over the place with this hot tag. There are a few more great sequences until we get to Cole and Daniels going blow for blow. Cole cutting off Daniels with a kick to the knee, dropping Daniels. Daniels blocks a super kick attempt, turns it into a uranage. Daniels goes for the best moonsault ever. Cole gets his knee up, catching Daniels in the face, rolls him up for the win. Which is a great way to finish that off, especially going into 15th anniversary with Cole taking that match, which, you know, how wrestling works, you know how that who's going to win that match. As the Bullet Club leaves victorious in the ring, it appears that Kazarian is chastising Daniels on their loss. Bobby Fish stands up at the announce position and cuts a promo on Cole. Hard to tell if the audience can hear him at first, because there's very little reaction. But he says that Cole isn't fit to be the King of Ring of Honor, and that he is that man, and somebody needs to tell Neville that Fish is infringing on his gimmick. Cole and Bobby Fish could be really, really interesting. You're getting this, and most of you watch Ring of Honor, you're getting this knowing what the outcomes of these are. And I'm not, you know, I know what the outcomes are, and I'm not saying this because I know that there's no way that Fish is going to win this with the lead up to Daniels becoming number one contender in Decade of Excellence. Fish winning the title completely takes the drama out of the championship match. It needs to be the older guy, and making people respect Christopher Daniels, but over the last couple of months, making a babyface transition into the top heel with the title. Like that's the story. That's where the drama is. So, I know the results. I haven't seen. I think Fish and Cole are going to be it. That's going to be an excellent match. They go to commercial, and after the commercial, there's some backstage video of a confrontation between Kaz and Daniels. Kaz tells him he's already lost to Cole in a championship match because Cole is in his head, and did he ever think. That he wasn't the only person, that he was the only person putting everything on the line. That was actually cool. And I said this a while back on, I don't remember what it was, on one of the review shows I did with Hayes and JB. In this situation, it actually looks like a security cam that's catching us, which is awesome. Like, it's not produced. It's not okay. We're having, and these are two guys with a long history. They're they're tag team partners, they're great friends, you know, they're like brothers. And even though things, you know, when you're in a heated moment, things transpire, there are things that are strictly for family. You know, there are conversations that are strictly for family, and you're not going to have them in the middle of the ring with microphones in hand, you know, camera people in your face and everything. So this was one of those real feel moments that I think, like I said, I said it before, and I think Tim Kale, follow Tim Kale on Twitter. That guy's fucking brilliant. Tim Kale said it very recently in one of his podcasts that he talked about, and I think he also wrote an article on it. He talked about the structure of the backstage promos and the lack of realism and the production, you know, it as an older guy, I'm 42. I was there with the Crockett stuff. You know, I was probably 12, 13 years old when, and this is further than backstage, probably 12 or 13 years old, where Dusty, and I saw it taped on Saturday night, or Saturday morning rather, where the Horseman jumped Dusty in the parking lot of Crockett's offices. I lived through the Ric Flair raking Ricky Morton's face in the back, like these real moments that they seem to just catch. Not okay, we gotta stop the show. We gotta, you know, get that moment before the moment where the wrestler's just there and they're taping up their hands, or they're, you know, fucking around on their phones or whatever it is, get to this overproduced piece where somebody walks in, they recite some bad dialogue, and it supposedly progresses the story. Something a little more organic, something that feels captured, you know, like, and it's not like WWE doesn't or can't do this stuff, because they did it with Kaz and Enzo in the Revival, where, speaking of being jumped in a parking lot, the Revival laid out Kaz and Enzo in the parking lot, and it was caught on tape. They also did it. They also did it fairly recently. It was leading up to WrestleMania, Ambrose and Brock, where I want to say it was Dean getting out of his car, and, you know, there are fans around and everything, and Brock mows him down, but it looked like it was fan cam, but like it was shot on somebody's phone. So to see this in Ring of Honor is cool. It felt very organic. It felt like something that we shouldn't have been seeing. And Ring of Honor and wrestling in general, televised wrestling in general, could benefit from more of this. They're back from break, and Ian Riccaboni is joined by Brutal Bob Evans. Somebody named their son Bob Evans. On commentary for the first match in Ring of Honor, in the Ring of Honor Top Prospect Tournament, it is John Skyler and Sean Carr. Skyler sounds familiar, but I don't think I know either of these guys. Before the match, both competitors get a pre-taped promos that are only worth mentioning in as much as these promos existed. They're bad, you know, and you didn't expect Paul Heyman level promos here, so, you know, no big. I don't even know if it's worth getting into, but I'll just read what I have here. They start off with the typical headlock takeover, headlock scissor head scissor leg trip exchange, which you've seen a million times, and it's not to diminish what these guys are doing, because they look good. They look fine, but it's every Van Damme, Jerry Lynn, you know, who kind of set the standard for that in the 90s. These guys aren't Van Damme and Jerry Lynn. Don't get me wrong, but you know what I mean? It's the I flip out of this, I head scissor out of that, and we end up standing up, facing off. You've seen it a million times, and you'll see it a million more. The big spots, if you can call them that, it's a spear from Skylar. Spear from Skylar, car on the apron. That's on the apron outside. Actually, that was pretty pretty nasty looking. Cold breaker from the second rope from Carr to Skylar. Skylar finishes off Carr with a fireman's carry into a rolling senton. He calls Southern Salvation. And that's off the middle rope. So that it looks pretty impressive. I think the tournament's a great idea. I think this top prospect tournament is a great idea. It's I wouldn't go as far as to say it's going to coronate a new star. Like that's the design. I don't like coronates. Coronation's way too big of a word, but I do feel that we like tournaments as wrestling fans. We dig tournaments. We dig watching and noticeably watching someone's progression. So this guy moves on to the next, and Skylar might be the guy. He looks like Tommy End without the tattoos, and he's got sort of a Road Warrior gimmick thing, and he's a small guy. He can't be more than 5'10", you know, 200 maybe. But you could see him, because of his look, because of his performance, you could see him moving on. And if you could get behind a guy in a tournament and watch his progression, and he has some success early on in Ring of Honor coming out of this, that's like, okay, we were here at the beginning of this. We watched this guy grow and become something. And that's a great way to sort of grow a superstar. We see them, you know, in their infancy in Ring of Honor, and these guys have history before they get, you know, before they got here, but we see them in their infancy and we see them become something. I think that's a great way to ingratiate himself to the fans and connect with the ingratiate sounds babyface, but you know, but to connect with the fans and grow along with the fans. So I think this tournament in general and this tournament in particular are great ideas. The next match that is announced but never happens is the Motor City Machine Guns versus the Tempura Boys. So I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit. The way I got this, this show, they never show again what happens to the Motor City Machine Guns and why they don't come out. And that's in the version that I got. Later on in the night, on commentary, Ian Riccaboni says that they went to the back. There was a video of the machine guns laid out, and there's a bit of a mystery as to who jumped them. And it's, you know, we've also seen this a million times, but with the tag team scene in Ring of Honor being as hot as it is with the Young Bucks and some people who I'm not going to spoil right now if you don't know, but the rest of the world knows already. That could be interesting. You know, the tag team scene in Ring of Honor is on fire right now, and it could be this little nugget of story, this little germ of a story could actually lead into something. The next match is the main event. It's Donovan Dijak challenging Marty Scurll for the Ring of Honor Television Championship. I paused on Scurll because I believe my comic book fandom is just so impossibly ingrained in me. Every time I write Marty Scurll's name down, I write Scurll every single time. I've seen his name written down a million times or in graphic pieces or whatever. I've seen his name written down a million times. I have Marty Scurll shirts that I'm going to get that has his name on it. I keep writing Scurll though. And if you don't know what a Scurll is, It's a green race of shape-shifting aliens with butts on their chins. Yes, I said it, butts. But here's the thing. Go read Secret Invasion, okay? Don't finish listening to me, and then go read Secret Invasion. And you'll understand. Enough said. I as you've listened, I read, I narrate the matches. I watch the matches twice. I write them out, and I take the big spots and the story pieces out, and it's a narration. And then I, as you've heard, then I give my opinion. I give my insight, and hopefully it's half decent insight on the match. I have those notes here, but I don't know if I'm going to get to them. And mainly because there's so much to love here. Before you get to the match, which is awesome, go watch it. Go watch it. Ring of Honor. Let me look back here in the page. Ring of Honor, air date February 25th, 2017. Go watch this match because the shit's awesome. But I'm one of those guys who, as I said, like I'm a detail guy. I'm a subtext guy. And listen, there's not a ton of subtext here, but there are elements that just push my buttons, that push my wrestling buttons. And there's so much to love here. I can't tell you. I don't know if I'm going to get to this match because I'm going to talk about all of the cool shit that's happening before the bell even rings here. So Dijak is super special. Dijak is a guy, if the WWE doesn't have their eyes on him, I heard that he left. I'm not sure. This is way before now, so there's no spoilers here. I heard that he left, and or he doesn't have a contract with them, one of the two. WWE doesn't have the eye on him. Something's wrong with the world, because this is a Vince guy, if there ever was one. He's a Vince guy with extra stuff. You know what I mean? Like he's a legit 6'7". No fudging numbers, WWE. He's a legit 6'7". He's powerful. He's fast. He's agile. When people used to say RIP Bam Bam Bigelow, who I loved, he was in one of my favorite matches of all time against Barry Windham, Starrcade 88. Go watch it. People used to say that Bam Bam moved like a light heavyweight or a junior heavyweight, but before we start calling them cruiserweights in the 90s. Bam Bam didn't move like a cruiserweight at all. He moved like a 300-pound guy who was particularly agile. That's how he moved. And it used to make me upset that people, that Crooked Moonsault, come on, man, stop it. Although I loved him and he was great, like a legit great. And if he's not in the Hall of Fame, he sure as hell should be. Dijak, however, is 6'7", 275, and moves like a cruiserweight, and does moves that cruiserweights do. And I'm so impossibly impressed by this guy. Even let's say that the dives that he does and the flips that he does on people, he's 275. I'm impressed that he's not killing guys doing this stuff from the top rope to the floor and the Fallsbury flops to the, you know, like, I'm surprised he's not but that shows you how awesome he is. Like that shows you what an athlete and what a professional he is. So yeah, I'm so impressed by this guy. TV title. I love the TV title, and I always have. Took different shapes and forms over the years, but I love the TV title. And I love it as a tool for story. And I love it as a tool for particularly a heel. I love it as a tool to generate more heat for a heel. again, I grew up in, you know, I grew up with Crockett wrestling. I grew up with that NWA wrestling. And the TV champion I remember best was Mike Rotunda. And that's not going to set, you know, a lot of people ablaze. Oh, Mike Rotunda. Mike Rotunda was awesome. Mike Rotunda is awesome. Mike Rotunda is one of the oh my God, like wrestling, like I like it. The guy was tremendous. And back then, it was, he was with the Varsity Club, and Rick Steiner was, I want to say, his main, like Steiner had left, and, you know, and they were feuding. He left the Varsity Club and those guys were feuding. He held that title, and then it was for like the Saturday morning shows and stuff like that. It was 10 minutes for regular televised matches. If you couldn't beat the TV champion in 10 minutes, it's a 10 minute draw. TV champion wins. It was something like maybe 25 minutes for pay-per-views or whatever they were calling them back then. So, you know, it was for a heel, he could put it in a deep freeze in the last minutes. And they would give countdowns and all of that stuff to the last minutes. He could put it in a deep freeze and never have to pin a guy, never have to submit a guy, and run essentially and bail and powder in the last minutes of a match to create not only heel heat, but to create drama. It can the babyface get their hands on him, the pin this guy to get this belt off of him. The TV title itself, ECW started to go in that direction. They kind of went away from it. Van Damme had the TV title, and I got to go look at this. I want to say Van Damme beat Taz for it, but I feel like there was somebody in between there, because Taz then goes on to win their world title, and, you know, and legitimizes that title. But Taz legitimized the TV title going on to the world title, and Van Damme then took it to another level. The thing that they were moving towards, in my view, before Van Damme got hurt, undefeated for like 26 months or something ridiculous like that with the belt, they were going in a direction where they were talking about the TV title being on par with the world title. Because of the way both of these guys legitimized the belts in ECW. And that was interesting to me, because world champion's a top guy, point blank, period. That's all there is. On the other hand, think about it. It's the television title. So if I wrestle a house show, so if I wrestle in somebody's backyard, so if I, you know, wrestle in your bedroom and nobody sees it, what does it matter? And that was a great clash. Like, I'm the television champion. I am the greatest wrestler on TV, on anybody's TV. I deserve to be recognized as the greatest wrestler in this company. I think the TV title can work in. I'm not going to crazy fantasy book, because it's never going to happen. But I tell you what I had in mind. But I think the TV title could, and people go, oh, too many titles already. I dig it. But with a brand split in WWE, a TV champion, you want to keep them separate, but have this little bit of connective tissue. A TV champion wrestles on TV. TV champion wrestles on TV. So he's going to wrestle on both shows. He's going to defend those titles on both shows. And you can go either way with heel or face. The face is the guy who John Cena, U.S. Open Challenge. I wrestle anybody. I wrestle anybody on either show. I don't need to have a contract. I don't need to know who I'm wrestling. I'm going to come to your show. You throw me your challenger and I will defend my TV title. And he could realistically, with all the wrestling shows, he could take it anywhere. If the guy's under 205 pounds, he could go to all shows, you know, and a heel could work it pretty much the opposite. Well, I don't want to go to NXT. Well, NXT's technically on TV, you know, that's your computer's a TV, your phone's a TV, the network is, it's a television in quotes network. You gotta go down and defend against Ty Dillinger. You gotta go down and defend against Noam Dar, you know. Long-winded, sorry, but huge fan of the television title. Marty Scurll, as I have written down here. Oh, dear God. What do you say about Marty Scurll? Let's start with his video wall. That shit's awesome. That's the music, the whoop whoop, the piano. This shit's right up my. This is what this kind of production excites me. If you look at that, and you know a little bit about film, that is like, okay, if Stanley Kubrick was creating an atmosphere for a wrestler, that's it. That is. A Clockwork Orange meets Eyes Wide Shut meets professional fucking wrestling. That's what that is. Look at that again. He's even got the Eyes Wide Shut Parliament Funkadelic Sir Nose mask. I saw that for the first time. I'm like, thank you. Whoever made that, thank you. Because this shit's beautiful. All right, I'm gonna stop there on that. I love that video wall, and that music is just tremendous. And then it's him, you know. And then it's this guy calling himself the villain, and it's the top hats and the bowlers and the fuzzy ring gear and the fuzzy. Yeah, it's his ring gear. It's his coat. The parasol. You know, it's all of these sort of disparate elements blending into one just phenomenal visual. I love this guy. I do have one small, tiny, infinitesimal nitpick with Marty Scurll. He's got the villain thing down. He does. Promo work, the old school the old school hand wringing, mustache twirling, taking a damsel in distress and leaving her on the train tracks, laugh down. He's got all of these incredible, villainous, hateable traits, but he's over because of this. And I'm not going to get into the psychology of that right now, because I promise you, eventually I will. But Scurll does the one thing that, and this is, and this one's my personal stuff, you know, if you, I'm dead wrong, Gerald L. Cooper on Twitter, hit me up. He panders to the crowd, and he shouldn't, in my view. He's super popular. He is a villain in presentation, but to the fans, he's a babyface, and we talk about this stuff quite often. Are you the heel or face by way of your actions or by way of the fan reaction? he shouldn't pander to the crowd. He shouldn't play to the crowd. He shouldn't wave for cheers. He shouldn't do his dance before he puts a chicken wing on. And it's a small nitpick, because personally, this is all me. Personally, I want the unrepentant villain. I want the Red Skull. I want who can I think of? I want Thanos. I want and those of you who haven't been introduced to Thanos in the films, you'll see. Darkseid from DC. I wouldn't call Grendel an unrepentant villain, but I want a villain who does not give a fuck. I want a villain who, I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to steal your dreams. Like that's the villain I want. I am here to take and take and take. And when there's nothing left to take, I'm going to find a way to get some more. The go around the world pissing every kid's Cheerios on the planet. That's the only thing that sates my need. Misery sates my need. And he's got all of that. He's got all of that. Except he panders to the crowd. It's a nitpick. It's a nitpick. There's so many shades of gray characters. Miz, Charlotte, Suzuki, who I fucking love. I love Suzuki. I want more of those kinds of villains. I want more of selfish base. I personally want those villains, and I want those villains because they make the hero better. Without the intrigue, without the villain being there, to push the action forward, to challenge the hero is nothing. And there are so few heroes in wrestling. And, you know, I don't know if there can be shining baby faces anymore in wrestling. I don't know if that's even possible. I don't know if fans will accept someone without at least a little bit of an edge as the big baby face. But what I do know, and I know this for a fact, and there, you know, hopefully there are people who are trained in wrestling, and I'm, you know, they're calling me just a dumb mark right now who doesn't know anything. I know narrative, and I know story, and I know character. I know these things. If you get a great villain, an unrepentant villain, a villain who doesn't care about getting chaired and booed, a villain who wants to be the bad, better way to put it, a performer who wants to be the bad guy, who literally, I don't want cheers. I want people to cry. You know, I want the little girl to cry when my music hits. You get that villain. You make that villain hateable. You make that villain despicable. You make that villain somebody that is nearly alien and unrecognizable to people. And put him next to someone who you want to be the baby face, the big hero. You're going to get the big baby face and the big hero. Just what it is. Okay. I'm going to pause here, grab a drink, grab some tea, not a drink, that's later, and I am going to get into a little bit of the, not a little bit, I'm just going to read my narration to you because I really do think it's worth it. So I'm going to put this on pause, and I will be back in just a sec. Okay, we are back. So I'm sending the episodes in a haze for him to edit and put out, and I realize that this is incomplete. So I either didn't hit record when I when I started talking, or I accidentally deleted this. So that's classic me. And I clearly don't have a problem going over the narration that I have written here again, talking about the Dijak Skrull TV title match. But I kind of feel a little bit bad for you guys, because if you watch Ring of Honor, you're current, and this feels like a bit of a time warp, because I talk about the noise here in another episode. And I'm at the studio now. What studio, you ask? Oh, Cooper's Color to Canvas, where everyone creates a masterpiece. Paint parties and creative events for adults, kids, and families. 3720 Garrett Road in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. Visit us at www.carlottacanvas.com. 610-905-8020. BYOB Paint Night. Adult parties. Kids programs and parties. Coffee and canvas for seniors. Fundraising. Corporate events. Space rental. Entrepreneur collaborations and more. Must shill for my business. Must shill. If it's good enough for Conrad Thompson, on and on and on. So, because, again, like, you guys are ahead and I'm talking about something that happened already, and I've got a bit of a time warp when it comes to what happens here at the studio at times. So, in the other episode, I talk about the noise because we are next to a bar. And because I don't keep up with anything except for wrestling and comic books, I don't realize that it's St. Patrick's Day. Today. Right now. At 8:01 p.m. Eastern Time. And people have been drinking all day. And I'm trying to podcast next to a bar. Just not the smartest thing. So, fair warning, there may be some ridiculous noises in the background as we get through this. So, again, it's the TV title championship match. Marty Skrull, the villain Marty Skrull, defending against Donovan Dijak. Skrull kicks Dijak's hand away at the Code of Honor. Skrull rushes Dijak but is met with a boot. Skrull slinks out of the ring, but Dijak follows him out with a Fallsbury flop. Did I say that Donovan Dijak's impressive? Because he is. For this guy at that size, at that height, at that weight, to vault the ropes the way he did, to not only be able to do that, but to not kill the guy who's down at the bottom underneath him waiting to catch him. I'm always amazed at what this guy can pull off. Dijak throws Skrull back in the ring, hits him with a springboard elbow drop off the top rope from the outside in for a two count. Dijak attempts a feast your eyes, but Skrull rakes his face. Skrull goes for a suplex, but it's reversed. But Skrull stops the suplex with the knee to Dijak's face. He comes off the rope with an attack, but Dijak picks him up for a backbreaker, a corkscrew senton, and a splash from the middle rope. Somebody come up with a name for this splash. It's not a finisher or anything like that, but it's so cool to see, you know, at his height, for this guy to be literally standing on a top rope and he's sort of the big oak tree falling down on his opponent. At JeraldLCooper.com, come up with a name for that. I appreciate that move. Before the break, there's a series of exchanges out on the floor until Skrull hits a tornado DDT on Dijak, the second best tornado DDT that I can think of, and the first is another guy in Ring of Honor, and Chris Sabin. Chris Sabin has, in my view, the single most beautiful, most gorgeous Tornado DDT, there is. And Skrull, he's got to be a close second. So as the match is going on, Lio Rush comes out, sets up a chair, and sits down at the top of the ramp. Odd enough that the crowd didn't notice him, and it took a while for the commentators to notice. But in all fairness, he didn't come out with music. The ramp or the stage, it was pretty dark up there. It took everybody a while to sort of acknowledge that, you know, there was a presence on the stage. I kind of dug it because that's one of my pet peeves, that every time somebody comes out, even to talk, there's music, there's pyro, there's all of this stuff going on. And in my view, it would be so much more realistic if, like, particularly a heel, if he came out to talk and all he was doing was talking, he would just start. Like, why do I need music to do anything, really? I'm just out here to talk. And it just made it feel a little more real. And when I get those moments, I definitely appreciate them. Back from the break, Dijak is super kicking Skrull. Skrull. He comes off the ropes. He's caught with a forearm. Dijak returns with a front kick and a forearm. He comes off the rope attempting a discus lariat, but Skrull blocks it, returns with a vicious slap, hits the ropes, and comes off only to be met with a discus boot. Dijak goes for a suplex, but it's reversed into a brainbuster by Skrull. Again, everybody thinks they can wrestle. I don't think I can wrestle. If I was, you know, 230 or whatever it was, like, these guys are such pros. They begin to not kill each other. That Dijak is 6'7", I just said it, 270 something. And for Skrull to not kill him doing a brainbuster shows what kind of professional, you know, what skilled artists these guys are. I almost hate to pick, but I'm always impressed how these guys pull off these moves, make them look great, and take care of each other out there. I personally appreciate the hell out of it. There's another great series until Skrull hits Dijak with a stuck pile driver, which looks nasty, and only gets one from the attempt. Dijak hulks up, or fires up, however you want to say it, kicks Skrull in the face, but Skrull goes behind and partially applies the crossface chicken wing. As he goes to the mat, Dijak rolls to his feet, then rolls Skrull to his feet, up to his shoulders, then hits a feast rise for a long two. I skipped it earlier, but Dijak asks for a handshake in the middle of the match, and he pays for it. And then he pays for it again here, as he asks for a handshake, and Skrull does the dislocation finger spot, which gets a big pop. Now, I don't think he should be doing it every match. I think that's he's fairly new to Ring of Honor. Everybody knows him from other places, PWG. I want to say he was in Rev Pro. Somebody correct me on that, please, if I'm wrong. So people know him, but he's fairly new to Ring of Honor. I think that's something that maybe you don't want to do on a week-to-week basis because it makes it a little bit tired, but that's just me. I don't think I need to see that every week, especially if you're not working a hand. Sidebar. Skrull steps on Dijak's injured hand, making him immobile, then delivers a series of vicious slaps to Dijak. And when I say vicious, I mean vicious. There might be one or two weak ones to start, but there's about three mean slaps, like piss you off slaps. Like, all right, professionalism out the door, I'm going to stomp your damn face in. But yeah, he definitely lays it in. He goes for a basement super kick, but Dijak grabs Skrull by the throat and hits him with a choke breaker. He goes for a corkscrew senton from the top, but Skrull moves and applies a crossface chicken wing. Dijak tries to get out of the move by grabbing the hand that Skrull has over his face. Skrull releases the hold, does a dislocation spot again, reapplies a hold, and submits Donovan Dijak to retain his ROH title. I love it. I love it. I nitpick, you know, there are things that are small that I point out and everything, but I love it. I really enjoy this match. I think the show is very good overall, but this match is absolutely worth your time going back to see if you haven't already. Rush gets in the ring, faces off with Skrull. He shows Rush the ROH title, puts it over his head, goes to leave. Rush turns his back, and of course, he clocks the crap out of him. Calls for the crossface chicken wing, but is run off by the Rebellion, who have been courting Rush for a month, month and a half now, trying to get him in the in their little clique there. Their little, not the clique, clearly, their clique. Then Jay White and the Motor City Machine Guns come out, and there's a bit of a standoff, and we fade to black. Well, we don't really fade to black. We go to that Twitter thing that they do at the end of the show, and then we fade to black. Good show. For this to be the first show that I review, the first show that you guys heard that I review, because there are shows that will never make air, so to speak, that I put together. But this is a great start. I mean, again, I say in the Zero episode that I felt like Ring of Honor was going to be a bit of a challenge for me because they're hit or miss. Again, like the style that I prefer isn't indie on TV with storytelling on top, which is what Ring of Honor is. Twitter hate, come at me, Gerald L. Cooper on Twitter. But I couldn't have enjoyed the, you know, this WWPN in our review shows tend to do number ratings. So I'm going to continue that tradition. And this is a high 7 for me. Great entertaining matches. Again, nitpicks notwithstanding. You know, I feel that the Christopher Daniels story is being told very, very well, and not in any kind of, and again, one of the things I appreciate is subtlety. They're not beating you over the head with it. It's a very straight line. It's a very straight line of 15th anniversary. There aren't a whole lot of twists and turns. And to be quite frank, I know what happened. I don't know how yet, but I know what happened. You know what happened, but you could still from here, you could see it. And predictable isn't always bad. You know, if it's constructed well, if it's clear that they put a lot of thought and effort into it and the quality is there, it doesn't matter to me anyway. It doesn't matter if the intrigue isn't that great because you know what the end result is going to be. I know what the end result is going to be without any spoilers. You know, again, we're behind. I know what was going to happen before it actually happened because of the way things are laid out. But it doesn't take anything away from it. Again, a well-told story is a well-told story. And if you can engage me as a viewer, if you can make me want to keep watching because your story is so good, you've done your job. So that's it for us today. Again, show I enjoy, good times. Follow me on Twitter, Gerald L. Cooper. Twitter hate is fine. I'm going to say this almost every episode. Twitter hate's fine. You disagree with me. I don't know why you hate me because you disagree. And we're going to have that conversation at some point. It's fine. But I would prefer an exchange of ideas, an intelligent, thoughtful exchange of ideas. I'm a guy who you're going to find out speaks emphatically. I think through what I'm going to say. I like to be a thoughtful person, and I think I should. It's my responsibility to be more thoughtful in this sphere because there are people listening. Hopefully there are people listening. So I would like a little bit of that in return. So I'm thoughtful here. You engage me on Twitter. You engage me on Facebook. Gerald L. Cooper on Facebook as well. Let's talk. Let's have a thoughtful exchange of ideas because I'm open to, like, my beliefs aren't the only beliefs. And if you hit me with something that I hadn't thought about, I'm like, oh man, there you go. That's great. You've expanded my world a little bit, and hopefully I can do that for you as well. What do we got? So again, we're on a WWPN network and we got a plug, you know, because not everybody does it. You know, you guys got to fix that. I'm kidding. We got to plug the shows. We have to plug the shows on it. We're on one network. Maybe I'm a lead in for somebody else. You come for me, you stay for somebody else. That would be awesome. So listen to the Red Zone. Listen to the Blue Zone. Listen to the Andrew Bello on the, man, flaking. Oh, my God, flaking. On the next level. There we go. On the next level. Sorry, Bell. listen to Dwayne Headley, the newly minted Dwayne Headley show, which is awesome. Listen to Strong Style Central. Listen to Let Me Talk to You. And while I'm flaking, I'm making sure I didn't forget anybody. Listen to all the shows on the WWPN. Again, sorry about that, Bella. I love your show. You know I do. That's it for me, and I will be talking to you soon.